St. Red, My Aim is True by Jordan D. White. Episode 5, Allison.
Red pulled out of the drive-thru lane and into the parking lot, stopping the stolen van in the first available space. He turned and faced Argento. They both sat for a moment, looking at each other. After a moment, Argento reached into the McDonald's bag and pulled out some French fries. He held them out in Red's direction. Red smacked them out of his hand. Fries flew all over the rear of the van, landing on both the frog-shooting device and its former owner, the magical pedophile, Father David Patrick.
"No way!" Red shouted. "You cannot do that to me! You can't just drop a bomb like that and then eat lunch casually. If you're going to tell me that the world is going to end because of me, you're going to have to explain yourself."
"I'm afraid I cannot do that."
Argento was gazing down at the contents of the bag.
"Bull! You're going to tell me now!"
"I cannot. I have been ordered not to."
Okay, fine. You've been ordered, so that's okay then."
"Red, please."
"They called up and said, just tell them the world may end. That'll be enough."
"Actually, I was not supposed to tell you that part either."
"Oh, really? Well then, since you've already disobeyed, what difference does it make if you tell me the full goddamn story?"
"It is classified."
"But the end of the world isn't?"
"Well, not quite as much, no."
"Great. So what can you tell me?"
It is about your girlfriend."
"What girlfriend? Wait, Allison? I told you, she's not my girlfriend. What about her?"
"She's going to try to kill herself."
"What? There's no way. She's the happiest, most well-adjusted person I've ever met. She's the one who would always cheer me up when I felt like a total loser. There's no way she'd kill herself."
"That is just it. She is not exactly the same person you knew. She does not remember you."
"What?"
"The previous life erasure policy. No one outside of DINR remembers that you even exist."
"You're saying that because she didn't know me, she's going to kill herself?"
"Well, yes."
Red looked out of the windshield in front of him. "How do you know this?"
That is classified as well. But we know for certain that she is going to kill herself sometime tomorrow."
"Tomorrow?" Red looked down at his watch. It was 10 o'clock at night. "Jesus, we've got to go! We're never going to make it!"
He threw the car into gear and pulled them out of the parking lot, the gas pedal flat against the floor. He pulled out into traffic, narrowly avoiding a Dodge Caravan.
"Jesus Christ! Relax, Red, relax! Hayden says that if we get underway within a half hour and go directly to her, we will make it."
"How does he know that? It's a 15-hour drive. What is he, psychic?"
"No, he's talked to our prophets."
"Prophets? Sure, why not? This gets more complicated all the time. So what? They can predict the future?"
"Not 100% accurately, but for the most part, yes. Sometimes their predictions aren't fully understood until after they come true, and they can be changed once people are made aware of them. But they say that if we go directly to Allison, we will get there before she kills herself."
"Wait, I'm confused. What does this all have to do with the end of the world?"
"I told you that is..."
"Classified. Yeah, thanks."
"Look, let's just say it was prophesized, okay? If we can stop her from dying, we can stop the world from ending."
"Fine. All that matters is that we have to save Allison."
"That is exactly what we are going to do."
"Good."
Red settled in for a long ride. The smell of the food drifted back into his consciousness. Pass me some fries.
"I think you'll find you knocked your fries all over the van."
"No, those were Father Patrick's fries." 15 hours or so later, Red was on the Verrazano Bridge on his way to Brooklyn, New York. Argento was snoring softly in the passenger seat next to him. He'd been up all night imploring Red to let him drive a shift, but Red was both determined and stubborn. He'd only stopped twice along the way to go to the bathroom, gas up, and buy coffee. Argento had fallen asleep around 9 a.m. Red had never been to Allison's apartment in the city, but he knew exactly how to get to it. He had looked it up online frequently. He'd actually had the driving directions from his apartment to hers bookmarked on his web browser. He would bring it up and look at it as he would decide definitively that he was going to go down there and see her, studying each line before he eventually would close it down and watch TV for a few hours. He got off the 92nd Street exit in 6 blocks, and a few turns later, he was jumping out of the van, leaving it parked illegally across the corner of a sidewalk. He stopped briefly at the rear door of the van to take the Christmas card out of his suitcase. He checked the address on the envelope just to make sure his memory was as good as he thought it was. It was. He wondered if he should wake Argento, but decided against it. He was sick of being bossed around and kept in the dark. Allison was his friend. He was going to save her. The building was a fairly large one, at least to Red, coming as he was from a much smaller city. As he approached the front doors, he decided to bypass the intercom and go for the speed inherent in the sword entry method. He drew his blade and sliced through the locks. After getting inside, he hopped down the few steps into the lobby, ran past the elevators. Her apartment was on the ground floor. When he got to her door, he banged on it a few times. He got no answer.
Allison! He shouted, knocking louder. Allison, open up in there!
Nothing.
Allison, you don't know me, but you've got to trust me. I'm not going to let anything bad happen to you. Please, let me in!
Again, no reply. He lifted his sword once more and cut through the locks on this door as well. He pushed it open and entered. He saw and heard no one within. He sheathed his blade and shut the door as best he could behind him. It appeared to be a one-room apartment. To his left was the kitchen area, separated from the rest of the room by a breakfast bar. It had a refrigerator, a stove, a microwave, and some dirty dishes that were piled up in the sink. The rest of the room contained a desk with a computer, a few bookcases, a TV, and a futon. Allison was not among them. He heard a noise from behind the door he could only assume was the bathroom. He walked up to it and listened closer. He heard it again. "Don't be afraid," he said, opening the door. A cockroach scuttled away as light hit the bathroom floor. The faucet dripped again, revealing the source of the noise. "Damn it," he said aloud. He was worried. Prophets or no, he couldn't help but fear that he was too late, that she decided to do the deed somewhere other than her apartment, and that he was standing around here at the exact time he should be elsewhere, saving her life. He stood in the middle of the main room, waiting for her to return. He looked at the books on her bookshelf. He didn't particularly remember her being a sci-fi fan, but who knows what changes could have come from her not knowing him. He hadn't thought he was important enough to make her kill herself, so what did he know? After a few minutes, he realized he had to go to the bathroom. For a bit, he tried to just hold it, but he found bouncing on the balls of his feet was not enough. He ran into the bathroom, flipping on the light next to the door. He stepped on the slowest cockroach. He closed the door and relieved himself. When finished, he went back to the main room. He stood there for a moment more, then collapsed down on the futon. He wondered where she could be. He looked around, and then it hit him. Chaser. He rose and looked through the house more thoroughly. Not only did he not find Allison's cat, he found no evidence that a cat lived there at all. No cat food, no litter box, no toys, nothing. This was not even her apartment. He ran out of there as fast as he could and checked the list next to the intercom. It said Jay Corrin lived in that apartment. She wasn't even on the building's list. Damn it, he yelled. He turned back towards the van and saw a police car slowly coming down the road. He hurried into the driver's seat and started driving immediately, as unsuspiciously as possible.
Argento! He yelled. Frank, wake up!
What? What's going on? What time is it?
Allison doesn't live in her apartment. Where is she?
Apartment? No, no. Goodness, is that the time?
Just tell me where the hell she's supposed to be.
She lives with her parents.
Her parents? Her parents don't live in the city. They live in Long Island.
Yes, New Hyde Park.
You said we were going to the city.
Well, pretty much. It's right next to the city.
Yeah, and there are towns in Spain right next to France, but the people who live there are not Frenchmen.
It is pretty much in the city.
Just tell me how to get there. Argento pulled out his Palm Pilot.
Where are we?
Brooklyn, 92nd Street.
We have to hurry.
No kidding, just tell me where to go.
Turn here. Why didn't you wake me?
I thought I would just go in and stop her.
It's not going to be that simple. She doesn't even know who you are.
I know that, Red said, weaving through the traffic. But I thought I would save her first and then worry about reintroductions.
How were you planning on convincing her to even let you into her apartment?
Red glanced over at Argento and then refocused on the road.
Oh, no. No. Red? Did you break into some stranger's apartment back there? Good intentions will only get you so far.
Thanks for the proverb. Now just tell me how to get to her parents' house.
The drive to New Hyde Park was frustratingly long for Red, silently cursing himself the entire time. He sped along the residential roads at dangerous speeds. It was all Argento could do to keep his mind on directions instead of praying to live.
That's their street.
Red hung an incredibly tight turn right onto Lily Court Road.
We are not going to make it.
Don't say that, Frank. Keep positive. We have to make it. We have God on our side, right?
Yes, but the prophet said...
Forget them. Is that it?
Yes, 235. That is it.
Red pulled into the driveway and jumped out of the van without shutting the door behind him. Argento leapt up to give chase.
Wait, Red! This time we do things my way.
What way is that? Red said, hurrying to the door.
The slightly more subtle way. The way that does not draw any undue attention to us.
He held Red back a bit and moved himself in front of him at the front door. He rang the doorbell.
This is a waste of time.
Yes, and it's also legal for a change.
The door creaked open. A woman opened the door. She had dark straight hair cut around chin length. She had thick glasses. She was about 50 and seemed nervous about having visitors. She looked just as Red had remembered her, but from her expression, he could tell she had no idea who he was. Regardless of the amount of times he was told that no one would remember him, seeing Mrs. Innes again without her knowing him left him feeling strangely empty inside.
Can I help you?
Hello, Mrs. Innes. My name is Francis Argento, and this is Mr. Red Kane. May we speak with your daughter Allison, please?
What is this about?
Who's there, honey?
Came a man's voice from further within the house. Mr. Innes came in and joined her at the door. He was still the same balding and bespectacled man Red remembered. He had taken Allison and Red bowling when they were younger. He always beat the pants off both of them. He had a slight space between his front teeth that you couldn't really notice unless he smiled.
These men want to see Allison, John.
Where do you know Allison from?
We work with her. We just want to speak with her for a moment.
Allison doesn't have a job.
Oh, well, I meant to say...
This is an emergency, Red said, pushing his way past all three of them into the house.
Where do you think you're going, young man?
Allison! Allison?
I'm calling the police.
Please, that's not necessary. We just want to check and make sure Allison is all right and talk to her for a moment. We have reason to believe she could be in danger.
What kind of danger?
He followed Red up the stairs and grabbed him by the shoulder.
What do you think you're doing?
Please! If you care about your daughter, just help me find her.
Mr. Innes looked into Red's eyes. Their eyes stayed locked for a beat before Mr. Innes spoke.
She's been in her room all day. Right over there.
Thank you.
He ran for the door, Mr. Innes following close behind. Allison, are you in there? Are you okay? Once again, Red found himself getting no reply. The door was locked from inside.
Allison? It's Daddy. Are you all right in there?
Stand back.
Red began to reach up for his sword.
Red, do you need any help breaking the door down?
No, said Red, pulling his sword out. The Innes gasped. Argento sighed.
We're coming in, Allison.
He swung his sword and destroyed a third door for that day. He shoved its remains aside and barreled into the room. A moment later, he dropped his sword. Allison lay face down on the floor. The carpet beneath her was stained with an enormous quantity of her blood, as were various objects around the room from splatter. She was wearing a black dress and makeup. In her right hand was a knife, which she had, judging from the gash across her jugular, used to slash her own throat. Chaser, her cat, was lying on her back. He looked up at them and mewed. He was attempting to clean the blood off of himself. He had already left little bloody paw prints around the room.
Sweet Jesus!
Red leapt forward and grabbed Allison. Chaser ran off and hid under the bed. Allison! Allison, please!
No! No, Kate! Don't come in! Call an ambulance!
Red began to cry. Allison, no! Why? What happened to you? He could faintly hear Mrs. Innes talking on the phone in the next room. It's my fault! It's all my fault! Red looked behind him to the others. Argento stood frozen in his tracks out in the hall, his hand over his mouth. Mr. Innes was looking over at the bed. He walked over to it and picked up an envelope that had been set upon the pillow. He opened it. He was tearing up as well, but he did his best to read the letter aloud.
Mom and Dad, I know you love me, and I have always loved you, but I cannot go on living in such a lonely world. Back in high school and grade school, there were people who wanted to know me, who wanted to talk to me, but none of them were real people. They were merely shells who fooled themselves into thinking that happiness was a real emotion.
Mr. Innes took off his glasses and wiped his eyes.
I'm sorry. I can't stand by and watch as so many miserable people go through the motions of their lives, brainwashing themselves into thinking the world is a good place. I think we all learn in September what kind of place this world is, and I think it will be better off when I die. I know you didn't believe me when I tell you my silly stories, as you called them, but they were true. My death sets me free, but it will do far more than that. It will save everyone else from the horrors of this world. It will set us all free. It won't be long now if you're reading this, trying to make peace with the world. I know I have. Forgive me, Allison.
Allison's head was clutched to Red's chest. Chaser had snuck out from under the bed and was sniffing at Red's shoes. Argento slowly backed down the hall and out of sight. Red heard him run down the stairs and out the front door. He looked up at Mr. Innes, whose eyes were now much redder than white. He closed his eyes and sat down on the bed. Red rolled Allison onto her back and stood up. He looked down at his sword where he had dropped it. The blade had cut through the floor of the room. The hilt had stopped it from dropping down to the next floor and was the only part of the weapon visible. Red bent down, picked it up, and sheathed the blade. "I'm sorry," he said, and walked out of the room. As he went along the hallway, he could hear Mrs. Innes crying in her and her husband's bedroom. He walked down the stairs and out the door Argento had left open. Argento was on the front lawn, talking on his cell phone.
It was in the note. I hope not as well.
Let's get out of here. Argento signaled for him to get quiet.
Of course I will. It won't come to that, sir.
Red walked away from him and got in the van. He climbed into the front seat and put his head down on the steering wheel and began to cry. A racket sprung up from the back of the van. "Knock it off!" Red said. Then he lifted his head. He leapt into the back of the van and straddled Father David Patrick. He grabbed onto the corner of the tape covering the priest's mouth. Patrick mumbled and shook his head. Regardless, Red tore the tape off of his mouth.
"Ah! You bastard! You're going to pay for this, I promise you!"
"Shut up!" Red said, pulling his gun from its invisible holster. Patrick still didn't know that the weapon couldn't injure him. "You're going to do me a big favor."
"I will do no such thing."
Red smacked him upside the head with the gun. "You are, or I'm going to see if this contraption back here throws intestines as well as it does frogs. Now come on!" He moved to one side and tore off the tape binding Patrick's legs together. Throwing open the rear doors of the van, he grabbed roughly onto Patrick's robe, dragging him out of the van. Argento was facing the other direction, and he had his free hand covering his free ear. "Don't worry about me, Frank," Red called to him. "This one I can really handle." Father Patrick was finally getting his footing as they reached the front door.
Hey, easy now. I'm coming with you, okay? Now, where are we going?"
"Upstairs." The two of them went up, past Mrs. Innocent, into Allison's bedroom, where Mr. Innocent now knelt next to his daughter.
"Oh, my God.
What's going on? Who is he?"
"A priest," said Red, throwing Patrick on the floor.
"Why is he tied up?"
"So he doesn't touch anyone's privates."
"What do you want from me?"
"Heal her."
"Heal her? She's dead. I've never..."
"Can you do it?"
I don't know."
"You're going to have to try it, then, if you don't want to join her."
"What is going on here?"
"Don't worry, sir. Everything's going to be fine."
"I'll need my hands."
Red grabbed his sword and slashed it through Patrick before he even had a chance to react. Both the tape that bound him and his clothes fell away. At first, the priest was in shock, but after a moment, he looked up at Red and said,
"You bastard."
Red pointed his gun again and said, "Do it!" Patrick, now naked, knelt over Allison. He placed his hands on her, one on her neck and one on her chest. "Hey!"
"I'm trying to get her heart to start, okay?"
It began almost immediately. The blood surrounding her body began to recede, as if part of a video clip played backwards. In a few seconds, all the blood was gone, not on the carpet, not on the cat, not anywhere. He moved his hand from her neck to her head. The gash was gone. He remained in that position for a minute or two. Patrick appeared to be straining himself. After a moment more, Allison began to cough.
"It's a miracle."
"What else is new?" Red shoved Patrick aside and took Allison's head in his arms again. "Allison! Allison, can you hear me?" She groaned. "Oh, thank you, thank God," Red said, kissing her forehead as he hugged her. The sound of an ambulance began to fade into their hearing. Her eyelids fluttered for a moment as she regained consciousness.
"Red, I've missed you."
End of episode 5.